see if Molly and I can be heard on this tape. Okay, this is an interview on April 5th, 2002. I'm Mary Kambick, and I'm interviewing Molly Rush, who's in Pittsburgh. We're actually talking in a restaurant in Pittsburgh, and Molly is the head of the Thomas Merton Center and was very active in the Great Boycott that we'll be talking about in around the year 1967 to 1970. I'd like to point out that we're going to be talking about Molly's involvement in the boycott, and also there is a relationship of the narrator to the interviewer in that I've known Molly for a long time and I'd like to consider her my friend. And I'd like to begin by asking for your consent to do the tape, Molly.
Is this okay? No problem.
Okay, great. And I'm wondering if you might talk a little bit about yourself, just to talk about your own experiences, to give some background to people who might be listening to these tapes in the future about exactly what your interests are and how you got involved in this yourself and your own history.
Well, I initially got involved with the civil rights movement in 1963. And as a result, joined the Catholic Interracial Council of Pittsburgh. And it was through the Catholic Interracial Council that I became acquainted with the farm worker situation. I'm currently, and have for 30 years now, been on staff of the Thomas Merton Center. Well, I was co-founder and then joined as staff in 74. So we're a ministry for justice and peace.
Okay, thank you. So in terms of the beginnings of the Great Boycott, do you have any memories of exactly when or what happened that got you involved in the Great Boycott originally?
Well, I'm sure what happened was that something came up at a meeting of the Catholic Interracial Council, that there was this boycott and the story of the farm workers, of which I knew very little at the time. But I'm sure I got involved before the Rojases came to Pittsburgh. But I think the fact that they came to Pittsburgh and were living in the rectory with Jack O'Malley, and he was my pastor at that time, St. Joseph's, Manchester, and that was sort of a hotbed of social activism around Pittsburgh. There were nuns in the convent and people living in the rectory, and it was unusual in my experience to have a farm worker family living in the rectory. They were there for a time until they found more space to live. And so I not only became acquainted with farm workers and their struggle, but got to know a little bit of Mexican-American culture through, getting a chance to eat Elena's good cooking in the rectory, having the kids come out to my house and play with my kids. And so, actually, my daughter Linda, I think it was Debbie, got to be good friends at that time and would visit back and forth and so on. So it was both getting involved politically, but also, I think, a real learning experience.
On the personal level. So
yeah, that's sure.
That's good. Do you remember offhand, just going back, how old you might have been around that time? About 67, 70.
I would have been in my 30s, early 30s.
Okay, thanks. So it's just a point of
reference. I had four kids when I joined Catholic Interracial Council.
Okay.
And then I had a couple more. I think gave up by 1968.
Okay,
that's child.
Good to put it in perspective. And do you remember, what would you say was your particular role in the boycott? Did you actively picket, make phone calls, speak to groups, or maybe all of the above, or something?
Yeah, I did some of the second and third, but I think most of the time I'd be on the picket line or going out to a grocery store and trying to talk to the manager of the store, or holding up banners at various places, handing out information, putting articles in the Merton Center, not the Merton Center, that was before Merton Center, in the Catholic Interracial Council newsletter, taking information to meetings, that kind of thing.
Okay. And what affiliation would best describe you in the boycott at that time? Would you say you were a member of a student or faculty group, a member of a religious faith community or congregation, a union member, a political activist, or maybe a combination?
I think more the political activist, but of course the church connection was there too.
Okay, so those would be the two main connections
ones.
At that
That's
time.
That's right.
And I had some questions about the Rojas family who came for the boycott, and you did share that you knew them when they were at the rectory at first
sure.
and ate with them. So was this the first Mexican-American family you had experience with, or had you known other people in
Probably
that culture?
So. I may have met other people, but we really got to be good buddies, and there was a relationship there.
And you did visit their house on the north side yourself many
sure.
times.
Sure, well, especially when they were at the rectory, I would see them. Or they would come out to my house and visit there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In terms of the family coming, did you have any, looking back, did you have any sort of ideas about what Albert's role and Elena's role were, whether they were the same or, you know, what differences might have been in the Pittsburgh community for them when they came as a family?
Well, I think it was clear that Albert was the organizer, and Elena had family duties and, of course, care of the children and family. But I felt that it was a team kind of an effort myself, mm-hmm. and I always felt that Elena brought a great personableness, the personality and mm-hmm. friendliness that I think made it easy to get to know the family and to be more than just simply political activism per se. It was that plus.
Okay. And in terms of some of the other people that you worked with in the time of the boycott, did you get to know members of the community who were working on that you might not have met before or might not have worked with in the past that you might recall now?
Oh, sure. I mean, beyond members of the Catholic Interracial Council, there was a whole group of people that regularly got on the picket line, you got to know. I remember particularly an optometrist from McKees Rocks, a Jewish doctor who was very supportive of the boycott and very supportive of Albert and his whole family.
Right.
You know, were very, very close. I think there were other people, rabbis and various other people that I was meeting partly through Catholic Interracial Council.
Right.
I'm trying to remember. I think perhaps the Allegheny County Council on Civil Rights may have at some point endorsed the boycott. I'd have to really check my memory on that, but I was a regular part of that group, which was both interfaith and NAACP and all of the civil rights folks. But McIlvain will remember, but I think perhaps they, had, or at least information was shared at some meetings and things like that.
And the different groups that you might remember, such as, let's say, students and the labor union members, mm-hmm. and then the political and religious activists you've already mentioned, did your opinion of any of the groups change over time, either positively or negatively, or did you feel pretty much the same way about the groups you met, or did you feel there were any changes in
Well, I did get to know people in the labor unions at the time. Again, it was fairly informal, mm-hmm. chatting with people on a picket line or, trying to, hold a meeting with somebody or do, have a presentation at an event. And mm-hmm. So it would be a way of both doing the work, but also, I think, building friendships and relationships. So that was important. I think probably it was very helpful later when we were trying to start the Merton Center to have a base of people beyond the Catholic groups who I had been involved with. It was much more of an interfaith effort.
Well, since you're still in the Pittsburgh community, do you still know when people from the Great Boycott that you would still consider your friends or that you're working with them still at this point in time?
Oh, sure.
Later?
Sure.
Okay, cool.
So Jack O'Malley definitely is one, and Marcia Snowden, who was a nun at that time. She's no longer in the convent, but she's doing good schools organizing now. A number of other folks that I met in the course of the boycott who I...
It's still politically active now.
Either they're politically active or come in and out, and see them periodically.
Okay. Now, after the grape boycott, there was a lettuce boycott, and another family came, the Valencias, along with some organizers from California. And do you remember whether you continued your involvement with the lettuce boycott or as much, or did you pull back?
Sure, I did. I didn't have quite the close relationship with the Valencias, but I certainly knew them. They had an office on Craig Street, I think, in a building for a time. And I can remember one funny story of going into Eaton Park to have a hamburger or something and saying, well, do you use head lettuce on your hamburgers? And I remember the waitress's answer was, oh no, it's shredded. Classic story.
So it's talking about a different, from the fruits to the vegetables, I guess. There was a lot of stories people had.
Yeah, sure, you go around to the supermarkets and both try to talk to the produce managers or hand out leaflets outside to ask people not to buy grapes or lettuce, or wear buttons that said no grapes. I think there was one where it looked like almost like a skeleton or something. Do you remember
like
that
skull?
One?
Yeah, with it made out of grapes.
Right.
So probably the amount of information really, I mean, this was something that really involved a lot of talk about the shopping and consumer issues in terms of, you know, how that affected the farm workers plus the consumers. And
well, they also went to the produce yards quite frequently, but I had little kids, so I only got there a few times, but I know others did a regular effort at the, you know, 5 or 6 a.m. or something like that.
And, well, that was actually one of the things I was going to talk about, and I know that during some of the money collections, for example, at the steel mills, and talking about the labor movement, I just had a few questions. Those were before dawn, around 5 a.m., which was not a good time for a lot of people. So at that point in time, you were one of the people who could not do that.
Having kids to get up and get to school and that kind of thing. So
we're going to guess that this was probably one of the activities that was very difficult for family people to be involved in at that time.
Sure.
So, had you worked with other taking the plant collections as one example, working with unions. Had you worked with union members on any projects or activities before as a group?
Well, there may have been some connection with the civil rights movement, but I think at that time less so, because I can remember during the civil rights movement marching at, you know, to try to open up some of the unions, and you know, there was also, I was involved in the peace movement, and at that time, I think there was probably more antagonism towards, you know, peace activists and civil rights activists. And I would say that's changed a fair amount since then. Not totally. I still have my problems with the living wage campaign here.
Right.
But I'd say those people that I did meet in the unions at that time were the activists, and many of them have stayed active in one way or another. I've gotten to know them in other ways.
Well, that's a good perspective on the change in Pittsburgh, since you've been so involved on how these movements were. And we will cover some of the area about some of these things that happened, because that was, I think, important to everyone in that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the religious community, and I think you would probably include yourself in one of the persons who would have that affiliation. Did at the time of the boycott, did you consider yourself as having a religious affiliation then?
Oh yes, very Catholic.
Okay, so that was definitely at the time of the boycott. And was your personal faith community, your own church, or the official church that you remember involved in the boycott to any extent in terms of making statements or supporting it that you can recall?
Well, I think one of the influences probably on me in terms of labor issues, long before I got involved, you know, directly, was number one, reading Monsignor Charles Owen Rice in the Pittsburgh Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And he regularly covered all kinds of labor issues.
Right.
And also, I think certainly I left my home parish much more to do with my civil rights activities and peace activities.
Mm-hmm.
But it was wonderful to find a home at St. Joseph's Manchester, where there was a broad array of support. And of course, Catholic Interracial Council was always trying to get the official church engaged and involved with these things, with more or less success. And, I'm sure in some ways there were a network, there were a lot, I can remember nuns getting arrested.
Right.
Picket lines down in Market Square, things like that.
So that is a, in terms of the people, you distinctly do remember people who would represent faith.
I can remember
really
individuals. Now, they may have had an influence in their communities, and I suspect particularly the sisters did. In terms of they may have made one or two nuns that would get arrested, but they probably got more support from their communities. I think it's the parish was the tougher nut to crack.
Right. But they were, as a group, and I'm including, of course, the rabbis, ministers, or Quaker activists who have
That's
always
right.
been active.
Got to know some of them.
These were, you have memories distinctly of those people being involved to a pretty
Very
large
much so.
Extent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, in terms of what happened then, since you're still active today, do you think the religious groups would be as likely to support some of the labor activities now, such as the campaign you're involved with, the living wage? Do you think they would be as quick to support some of these issues now as they were then? Do you have any feelings
well,
about that?
I think it's different from place to place and church to church. I think the living wage campaign presents a special challenge to the churches because many of them pay low wages to parish workers and so forth. And I think some churches hesitated before they would endorse a city council resolution, you know, perhaps for the fear that they'd be, you know, the pot calling the kettle black kind of thing. However, there are specific churches who have gone out of their way and raised their salaries of their workers, congregations, I think particularly some Protestant congregations. But others too, I think. I think there's been some of that. But I think on the whole it's disappointing that there has been, with the teaching of the church being so clear on the right to a living wage since Pope Leo XIII, you know, one would think that it might have sunk in by now a little
right.
more than it has.
Well, yeah, and you have a good perspective because you really have been in the same community working on these issues all the year, so you
That's right.
bring a sort of a unique outlook to some of these questions because you really have been probably one of the more involved people in this. And moving on to some questions about women's issues, some of the literature that's written now looks back over the participation of women back then in the 60s, and sometimes I guess there's a realization that those issues were just starting to become prominent in the consciousness of people. And would you consider yourself personally involved in any of the groups then or now that would be supporting new definitions of women's roles, in terms of
I was very affected by the, you know, the feminist movement. I became a member of the National Organization of Women and was South Hills chapter when Ali Schmiel was president of that chapter. I had some difficulties with some of the policies of now and some of the other feminist groups. I'm a mother of six children, come out of a perspective of, you know, the Catholic teaching on abortion, which I think has created difficulties with me all across the board because of my sense that the approach to that issue is not best addressed by legal remedies. So I make the pro-life folks mad because I'm not particularly in favor of that. I sort of make some of the other feminist women judge me as not being feminist enough because I'm sort of in that terrible middle
right.
on the issue. I really have a great deal of sympathy for young women that face that issue and have to address it. And my approach would always be to how can we find ways to limit the number of abortions by providing what it is that young women need to address their concerns. And
these are still questions.
It's still an issue. I attended the Houston National Conference on Women. I've been involved in a lot of different women's activities and feel myself very much a feminist. But I think the definition has made it very difficult for someone like me that has some questions on up and down the line.
Okay.
But I still feel very much in tune with, I think, I think it's very important that women be able to live their full lives and use all of their talents, and whatever that may be. I don't think women should be pushed into business because they have to be, but I do think if they have talents and need to work and want to work and you know want to work outside of the home, you work at home. I know that very well. I really think the question is one of choice. And I think the question is one of opening up possibilities to women that didn't exist when I was a girl.
True, okay. You know, thank you for that. In terms of when you were active in the boycott, did those issues really, were they a major part of the boycott community, or did you not feel particular attention that men and women worked together fairly well in this movement?
I think that happened. Certainly there were, I mean, I think it was clear that Albert was the leader of the farm worker boycott and you know, really helped to set the agenda and worked with people. It wasn't like he was a top-down type guy, but so it wasn't like a male domination thing, I didn't feel. But he certainly, simply because of his experience and his background and his skills was, you know, was there. I think Elena was somewhat more in the background with having children to raise and all of that. But I thought it was a tremendous difficult thing. I tried to imagine myself picking up a whole family and moving into a strange new culture in a place that has winter.
Yes,
right. And being separated from your own community the way that they were. And I thought the thing that was remains with me was how much they taught us, far beyond anything to do with grapes and lettuce.
So it's more the personal I think relationship you mentioned before, along with the political that happened.
Taught us about living and about joy and a lot of things that, you know, obviously their lives have gone in various directions since that time, but certainly we learned from them a great deal.
Oh, thank you, because that's very nice perspective on the political, I guess what they would call now the personal and the political in terms of what that meant.
Well, and it all blended together in a
right,
way.
Right, you know, maybe that might be different from some other movements that we've been involved, or everyone's been involved in. And I was just going to ask you about a couple of conflicts that arose that I think that some of them you may, I know you would be aware of and may have some opinions about. And one you did mention being in the Catholic Interracial Council, and at the time of the boycott, there was that major civil rights initiative in Pittsburgh, the Black Construction Coalition, where they were trying to integrate the unionized building trades, who of course had unionized building trades had supported the farm workers, and remembering that time, there were thousands of people who were demonstrating and hundreds of people arrested, and I'm pretty sure you do remember this.
Very well. I remember walking down Grant Street and having steel workers who were throwing things down on us. I didn't take part in the march over on the north side because my husband was too afraid for me. I think I must have been pregnant at the time, so he and a friend of mine went, and a friend got arrested, and yeah, my husband was very engaged with that. But he was there more because he knew I wanted to be there. So.
And you're sort of take your place with that.
Yeah, he sort of did that.
Well, in some of the marches, the people who were farm worker supporters carried farm worker signs. And do you remember that that perhaps some of the unions were upset at that point that they had supported the farm workers, but yet the farm workers were pretty strongly taking the stand that they were in support of the Black Construction Coalition, and do you remember that had arose among some of the people?
I'm sure that created a lot of difficulty at that time. I don't have specific, I mean, I know it happened, but I don't have I wasn't present at some of the meetings where that was batted around.
But that was what we might call a conflict within groups who might have
Sure.
before, you know, were working together. So
that's right. And that happens every day that I'm involved in things, you know. There's always a...
Well, one other conflict that happened, do you remember when Cesar Chavez actually came to Pittsburgh? He was here for a few days doing, you know, public relations, mm-hmm. having...
I have a picture of him and me and Jack.
Okay. And so you do remember
I remember meeting Cesar.
You remember meeting him. And do you remember
but
that?
I wasn't real engaged in the inner workings of those, you
that
know,
things that went on.
That were going on. He was meeting with, I think, some labor leaders and, you know, some more prestigious type folk, you know.
Well, do you remember that there was sort of a political conflict with some other members of the boycott support committee where there were starting to be pressure to remove people who were identified as members of the Communist Party from the lines, and that there was some conflict when that was actually done mm-hmm. during one of the picket lines, that when a woman was specifically asked to leave, that some of the members of the boycott support committee were not happy with that because they felt it was unfair. And I'm just wondering if you remember that that had happened and that there were some members
of
the support.
Well, you're recalling it for me, and it it does, you know, jog a memory or two. My own position, I think, pretty much from the beginning has been that we've worked as a Merton Center and as Catholic Interracial Council with those people with whom we were willing to be part of the struggle. And so,
so personally,
over the years, we got to know and work with many of the members of the Communist Party who... I actually think a couple of them went to St. Joe's for Mass, as I recall, Joe Rudiak and his wife, and a couple of folks like that. I guess I just never could buy the idea that you blackball someone for political beliefs if they're cooperative and willing to work with the struggle. I just have always refused to make those distinctions. You know, I'm just as glad to work with a bishop and a nun as I am with someone else whom I judge to be honestly working for the same right and just cause.
So for you, you knew it was an issue, but this didn't personally affect you.
I was involved with Catholic Interracial Council, and we were independent enough, I think, to be willing to step out there and work. That's probably why the diocese didn't like us very much on some occasions. But
thanks for your perspective, because that puts a new picture on it. Mm-hmm. Once again, as someone who was involved on the mm-hmm. different supports. And I just have some questions about the use of some of the symbols in the farm workers that was probably somewhat different, probably for some of the groups like labor unions, but not so different for people who have a religious connotation as they use symbols. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you remember specifically the Huelga flag with the Thunderbird and Our Lady of Guadalupe banners. That's something you associated with the farm workers. I think we could safely say is a cultural symbol and a religious symbol for the Mexican-American community. Now, as somebody who's mm-hmm. in a church, were you comfortable with those symbols yourself? You had no...
Oh, certainly. I was inspired by them, really.
Okay. So do you think that in terms of looking back, obviously, now, do you think that that might have been a new experience for some of the people, let's say, in the maybe the student community or the labor community who may not have seen that before?
I would think so. And I think you're right, it is as much a cultural issue as it is a religious issue.
And so this, in terms of, you know, traditions that use those, do you think that was there any effect on the other groups that might not have seen it? Do you think that might have changed them in terms of being more accepting of of people's cultural symbols as part of their own struggle for...
It may have been. I really can't say I've thought real deeply about that one because for me it was not a problem and I had no strong awareness of a lot of struggle over there, or the I wasn't real engaged with what was going on within the union movement at that time. I probably would have a little better sense today than I would have then.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. And just in looking back over all these the experiences, would you say generally that working on the boycott was a good experience for you? It was a positive experience?
Oh, very much so. I continue to feel that that was one of the powerful moments in our history where people who had been completely isolated and separated took on reality in the sense of humanity. Living in Pennsylvania at that time, I didn't know many people from Latin American or, you know, Mexican background, and I don't know many more today that I could talk about. But I think at that time, I lived in Mount Lebanon, for heaven's sake.
Right. A little different experience in terms of culture.
And Dormont, actually, but I mean, I went to church in Mount Lebanon, and I, you know, my, I think Dormont is a more, somewhat more integrated area than it ever would have been 30 years ago.
Okay. So, and also, along with your own satisfaction, you think that it actually helped the farm workers in what they were doing politically? That way
Oh, I believe so. I think those boycotts and the visibility they gave to the farm worker movement and Caesar's nonviolence, I think, was so important to those of us who were being inspired at the same time by the civil rights phenomenon and Dr. King. And it was. I tend to think of the two in tandem, you know, King and Caesar, because they both, in different ways, inspired through their nonviolent action.
Now, in your interest in nonviolence, it would be good to mention that you yourself had been a member of some actions that resulted in your being imprisoned for nonviolent resistance to.
Yeah, I've been arrested a number of times, particularly on peace issues, and once for a South African protest, but probably the one that caused me the most grief and most visibility was the Plowshares Aid Action in 1980, where eight of us, including Daniel and Philip Berrigan, went to a plant in GE King of Prussia, hammered on a couple of Mark 12A first strike warheads. And so I'm a convicted felon as a result.
Okay. And in terms of that experience and the farm worker experience, instead of just the politics, the whole, for you, the philosophy of nonviolence and that aspect probably is more important. It might be maybe for some other
very
people.
Deep,
who
very deep in this. Terms of what this is all about, and the power that one person can have through involvement in nonviolent action, and the power of a community that engages in nonviolent resistance or nonviolent action of and it takes so many forms. I think it's not well understood in this country, because we tend to see the action as being you know, shooting somebody or something like that. But really, if you're looking for long-term change of heart that brings real change, nonviolent action is the, in my experience, the most effective and the most long-lasting
Well, thank you, because that's a perspective that's just not that obviously you have the experience to share something beyond what other, you know, groups did. Any, you know, even among the supporters, that stands out. And I'm wondering, just to close, you, if you might have a favorite story from the boycott you might remember, like to share, or, you know, a memory that sort of sticks out above some of the other ones.
Well, I think the songs. I think the singing and the, you know, at all the protests, that was very, very important, and the sense that we were all together and part of something. So it's not so much a story, just an experience of being being together and finding myself in among people whom I respected deeply. And to me, that's one of the powerful gifts of being engaged in social action, are the people that you meet. And certainly, I was always really taken with the Rojas family and their sojourn here and getting to know them up close and seeing how I watched the frustration of, you know, Albert trying to deal with various groups and churches and labor unions and so forth. But there was always, I think, a spirit that kept us together, and that was important.
Okay, well, thank you. And I think we'll close this interview, which is actually at Alibaba's restaurant in the Oakland section of Pittsburgh on Thursday, and it's April 5th, 2002. And thank you very much for sharing for this record, all your experiences, Mom. Thank you.
It's been great and fun seeing you, Mary.
Thank you.